At 7 o'clock, I'm calling to order the Blue Mountain Planning Commission regular meeting for April 23rd. We're now in session. First order of business is a pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Before we go to the director's report, we have some special guests tonight. Mr. Zimmerman is going to introduce our special guests.
Yeah, these young men and leaders are from Troop 138, Boy Scout Troop 138, which meets down here at St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church right down in Palmyra. And they are here as part of the requirements of earning their citizenship in the community badge, right? And their scoutmaster here, Mike Capps, is their leader, and just want to welcome you all. And I hope everything I taught you last week comes true tonight, and I didn't tell you anything wrong. But if I did, it was in just an error, not on purpose. So, welcome.
The next item of business is that director's report, Mr. Jason Stewart, our planning and zoning administrator, will be giving us the director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had no board actions to report in the past month. The technical review committee did meet, and we discussed the SUP for major utilities and the master plan amendment for Poplar Ridge, and Mr. Tugwell will be compiling those. We're still in the process of compiling those comments, and we'll get those out to everyone. And that's all I have to report for this month.
Thank you. Now will be our first public comment section. We have two public comment sections, one now and one at the end of our session. The public comment section is for anything that's not on the agenda for tonight. If you are here for a public hearing, you will give the name chance to speak at the public hearing. This is public comment is period is for other items that's not on the agenda. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Al Talley. I live at 14307 James Madison Highway in Palomara. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I understand you have the comprehensive plan on your agenda, but there won't be any public comments at that time. Am I right about that?
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't, but normally it's just going to be a discussion that we have.
Just in case, that's what I thought, and that's why I'm here, because I understood it would be on the agenda. And I've heard some rumors that you might be thinking about reducing the size of the Palmyra planning area. I would like to suggest to you that you should completely eliminate the Palmyra planning area. That came into being at a time when we thought we would have public water and public sewer that would have capacity to support further development. It was a time when we did not fully understand all the consequences and impacts that intensive residential growth could have. Over the last 50 years, we've seen our population almost quadruple. The burden on our highways has increased much more than that, as more people commute outside the county to work, more children driving to school, more logging trucks, Walmart trucks, trucks avoiding the congestion on Route 29, all are combining to make our highways more dangerous and congested. I think we are at risk of becoming Northern Virginia. We're concerned about our underground water supplies. We do not know how much water is available, and we don't know how deep it is. We don't understand recharge rates. We know that in dry years, we're told that our water table has lowered and streams go dry that formerly were running strong. So we think it's a rather delicate balance. Any additional burden on it threatens all of us. We already have thousands of lots that are platted and approved for residential use in this county. We already have to plan infrastructure to support those new residents. If we fill our current planning areas with high-density residential growth, such as was planned for Walker's Ridge on just 230 acres, our county would be overwhelmed. Growth in Fluvanna has not brought us prosperity, because the growth has been residential growth, not the business and commercial growth that would expand our tax base. In fact, in 2011, only 1.3% of our tax base was labeled as business commercial. 92.5% of it was residential. It has resulted in us having one of the highest tax rates in the area, actually the highest residential tax rate. More residences will only make that worse. The village of Palomara is charming, and it's because it is a village. Could you give me about 30 seconds?
I'll give you time to wrap it up.
Thank you, sir. I have heard that we must plan for growth. I would prefer you plan for no growth, but if you must plan for growth, plan for it. The place for growth is along the corridor from Albemarle County to Zion's Crossroads to Ferncliff. Put those new people where they are convenient to the interstate, where they're not on the highways. Put them where we're starting to think about a water system. Sewer will follow. Don't put it in Palomara. Just eliminate our planning area, please. Thank you.
I will tell you that once we finish this third chapter that we have working on, we will have a public presentation at one of our regular meetings. What we're trying to do is divide it up in about three chapters at a time, and so that the public won't have 13 chapters to absorb our public hearing on the completed revisions will be at the end, but we're going to have a public comment as we go forward so that that everybody will have opportunity.
I think what we would like to do is to get ahead of the curve on this one and not try to change a plan after it's become a plan, but to have some input into the making of the plan. And that's why we're here early.
Thank you.
Do you want to hear some more comments, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Good afternoon, board members. I am Mary Tillman from 15686 James Madison Highway. And I want to know, why did someone plan to destroy the Palomara area when they put it in a comprehensive plan? If it is kept in a plan, we will be destroyed. We need to keep the Palomara area out of the growth area to keep it safe from townhouses, subdivisions, fast foods, banks, and what of 100 other businesses could be here. When the fire department was built, and I know when it was built, the new one up here, because my brother Boots was involved in planning it, they had to go back and forth and back and forth because they had to pass certain things, like the columns had to be put on and different things to match Flubana, the Palomara area. And also the sheriff's office, the fire department, all were made, had to be made just right to match the way they wanted it to be. All of these and Solitude, where my great-grandfather used to own, the locks, the old mill, the old jail, would be all surrounded by houses, lots of cars, kids. I have nothing wrong with kids, but I can see them down in there, turn things up. And junk around houses. I mean, it just ruined the Palomara area. And whatever else goes along with it when they move in. Palomara will not die. With all the traffic that's through Palomara, the surrounding business, and the little places that's has closed, understand that maybe some sandwich shops will go open up in Palomara, which would be nice. We do not need more houses for us poor people that have set income to pay more taxes. The board just voted on an increase in tax last week. So my vacation has been cut this summer. I don't have enough money to pay taxes. Let's get the Palomara committee to help clean up. Let's get a committee started, clean up Palomara, make Palomara look better. Yes, you will hear the same ones talking about Palomara over and over and over, because most of these people have lived here all their life. And let's keep the area going. We've got a lot of people who come in, they make a big hit, a big scene, they leave, they destroy our little town. It's in your hands, planning committee, but remember, it is my life, Palomara. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak, come forward at this time, state your name and your address, please.
Molly Suling, 219 Main Street in Palomara. My points are going to be very similar. I just think this is such an important issue that it bears repeating. Of course, having a comprehensive plan is wise, but I have to admit that I honestly never knew that the term Palmyra Planning Area translates to Palmyra High Intensity Development or Growth Area, meaning that from Camp Friendship down to Hayden Martin and as far as Stagecoach Hills on 53, that could all be intense development. And that is startling to realize that that's what that actually means. And I actually think that is just overwhelming and undesirable to the Palmyra / Pleasant Grove area. And lacking a central infrastructure, no development of any large scope makes any sense at this time anyway. And once bulldozed and asphalted, the landscape is destroyed. The rural beauty of Pleasant Grove, the surrounding area of the village, once it's gone, it's gone. No matter how many decorative pear trees and shrubs and nature trails that a developer promises, the land is ruined and we're on our way to Nova of Central Virginia, a loss to Fluvanna, not a benefit. And note that we already have dense development around Lake Monticello, and we're still catching up with this, while yet another development, Village Oaks, is to be absorbed soon. And assuming that they hook up to the lake water and sewer system, I just hope that that's been carefully evaluated, that the capacity is there and there won't be problems. And I know it's like a broken record that it's been pointed out that excessive residential growth without strong corresponding business and commercial growth has been more burden than boon to Fluvanna County. Have places like the old Best Pack plant and the Wolfolk Manufacturing Building in Fork Union and the Carysbrook plant, have they all been looked at as possible places to attract commercial operations to Fluvanna? And, of course, the Fluvanna side of Zion Crossroads and around Ferncliff and the I-64 corridor makes sense as areas for business and commercial. It just seems to make more sense to concentrate on the business and commercial development and support proportional residential growth rather than allowing a potential situation where resources of everything from schools to roads to water can be overwhelmed like a landslide. I realize planners and developers know the ins and outs of all the comprehensive plans and deal with it all the time, but the average person, such as us, might not find out about plans that affect their home and way of life until it's almost too late. So I'm glad to know about this opportunity to review the comprehensive plan, and for the sake of protecting the historic Palmyra area and the rural beauty of Pleasant Grove, I would ask that the area designated as Palmyra Planning Area be eliminated from the comprehensive plan at this time. Thanks.
Anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Come forward and speak. Your name and your address, please.
Yes. Thank you very much. I'm Judith Michelson, 33 Main Street, which was 13303 James Madison Highway in Palmyra. I live at the edge of the historic village. I'm also the executive director of the Historical Society. And, of course, I have spoken to you several times before. I am very respectful and very hopeful of this commission. My very eloquent friends and neighbors have already mentioned everything that I would mention, so I hesitate to repeat that. But I want to say that if you've ever been, and I went to Poplar Forest, you know that's Thomas Jefferson's retreat in Lynchburg. First time I went there, I was shocked. We went through very closely, densely populated development through small streets, and all of a sudden what was once perhaps 1,000 acres was 400 or less acres for an extremely famous building, historic building, that was being restored. I know they couldn't help being in the middle of it. They were there first, but I trust this planning commission completely, and I feel so strongly that I know after sitting in on the meeting last Thursday, the technical meeting, and I sat and listened, and I felt so comfortable hearing the same questions that we as citizens asked in terms of a particular environmental possible disaster near Palmyra, a new development. I urge you to put economic development in the right places in Fluvanna and eliminate or close out this Palmyra Planning District so that our historic district is a place of pride, beauty, and it stays where people want to come. I urge you to do that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak, come forward at this time. State your name and your address, please.
Yeah, Garrett Dudley from 14111 James Madison Highway. I wanted to speak to the comprehensive plan as well. The village of Palmyra, I believe, is the most historic spot in the county. It has an old school feel and look that I think we should try to preserve. Once we allow a storage facility, a car wash, or sheets, I think we've done a damage to the area that we just can't reverse. We already have the prospect of Walker's Ridge or whatever the new name is for that. And it doesn't seem like we have the utilities for that as it is. I'm not anti-growth, but it seems that it would be best to have that growth closer to Zion's Crossroads or to the lake where you have the traffic and the population to meet those needs. And those places, they don't really stand to lose, but we stand to lose here in Palmyra with the historical value and the old school feel that we have here. I think if you remove the Palmyra planning area from the comprehensive plan, you preserve something that makes this county stand out. And again, the history and the old school feel that everybody has talked about. So I would just ask that the Palmyra planning area be removed from the comprehensive plan. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak?
Yeah, my name's Sean O'Malley, and I'm at 155 Lexi Lane in Palmyra. And thanks for the opportunity to speak on this important topic. My belief is that it is important, and I think it's prudent for Fluvanna to tighten the scope of the current plan, and for many of the reasons that were already shared. And those reasons are addressing specific. I want to talk a bit of a broader context that maybe isn't being discussed, but I think it does have an impact. And as was previously said, getting ahead of the curve. So what's the curve I'm talking about is energy costs and their impact on housing and jobs. I don't know if folks follow this, but obviously petroleum drove a lot of the housing growth of the last century. And it's because cheap oil made it possible for transport from remote suburbia to your job. Oil's at record levels, $110 a barrel. The major oil companies have announced their CapEx, that's capital exploration. They're not going to invest the same they've done in the past. And the reason is they can't make a profit at $110 a barrel because they're going farther and farther offshore into harder places. The cut a long story short is there's the bell curve with oil, and we're on the far side of the bell curve. And as prices go up, people will not be able to afford to drive as far to their jobs. If people don't have jobs, they can't buy houses. So if Fluvanna is banking on continued residential suburban bedroom community, I think you got to get ahead of the curve and see that you can't go with past performance as a guarantee of future results. Really, what we grew up with was a result of cheap oil, which is no longer the case. It's not easy to get the oil anymore. So I strongly urge, I can give you guys lots of data if you want on that story, and there's a lot of information out there about energy, but I think you need to factor that into your decision making. I wholly agree that there's a lot of growth we can still do, even in a declining environment, energy intensive, resource constraint environment, historical, like it has it waiting here, and people do pay to go visit historical areas. So why can't the county focus on restoring that mill and down the lock, down by the water, and do other things? Or agriculture, why don't we push for more vineyards and get more of that tourist traffic and build an economy around tourism or other things instead of just people coming here to build a house? What's happened in Pennsylvania and some other areas where people can no longer drive to Manhattan for their job is those suburban communities are becoming kind of the slums because of the unfortunately people who would have to go to their jobs can't stay there, and then the houses are rented for, you know, it changes the makeup of the community, and I'd hate to see that happen here. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Anyone else? Please state your name and your address, please.
Yes, I'm Jeff Suling, 219 Main Street, and I just want to make my voice heard and say that I agree with everything that's been said today. If we destroy or lose what we have now, there's no way we can gain it back. I've seen it happen. We have connections to Northern Virginia, and we've seen that change so much. We don't want that. And the only other point I wanted to make was that it's not only Palmyra people, Palmyra, you know, the village of Palmyra people, but it's for the whole county. I know a lot of people at Lake Monticello and Fork Union that really love and care for our village and the historical value of it. And I do feel they may not be here right now, but that it is something that's beloved by all of us. And a lot of people bring their relatives and their company here to see the village and just want to keep it the way it is and not have a lot of growth. Thank you.
Good evening. Anna Cavanaugh, 15234 James Madison Highway. I just want to say I'm not a person of many words, but I agree with everything that's been said here, the reasons for removing the Palmyra planning area from the comprehensive plan. And if you would please do that. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing no one else coming forward, we will end our first public comment section for tonight. We will have another public comment section at the end of our session today. Our next order of business is the approval of minutes from March 26, 2013.
I move we approve the minutes as presented in the package tonight.
Do I have a second?
Yes.
Second. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Zimmerman, a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I will abstain because, and Ms. Eagers will abstain because we weren't both not here. I was out of state. So it was a 3-0. To abstain, and the minutes are passed as written. Okay, the next item is our public hearing for the night, SUP 1401, Timothy Reese.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. This is item SUP 1401. It's a special use permit request from Mr. Reese for a landscaping material supply business with respect to 11.558 acres. It's tax map 4, section A, parcel 38. It is zoned agricultural. And Mr. Reese is proposing a landscaping material supply business with outdoor storage of mulch, topsoil, and a 50 by 70 storage building with office space. Also, the possibility of his future residence on this parcel. This is a zoning map. It is the parcel here. If you can see the red pinpoint. 11-acre parcel on Paynes Mill Road. It is zoned agricultural. It's in the rural residential planning area. Aerial image of the property where there was previously 4 mobile homes on this property has since been removed. And Mr. Reese is applying for a special use permit to locate his business there. A few photographs for the commission. This is looking north on Paynes Mill. See the dwelling in the foreground there. It's about 90 feet from where his approximately 90 feet from where the storage building would be, and he does plan to, if this is approved, he would screen, add additional screening along that northern boundary between the building and that dwelling. It's a site looking east. When evaluating special use permit applications, planning staff uses two guidelines set forth in the zoning ordinance. The first one would be the proposed use should not tend to change the character and established pattern of the area or community. The subject parcel is within the rural residential planning area. It's bordered by some vegetation. As required by the zoning ordinance, if the FUP is approved, he would be adding additional screening. There were formerly, as I said earlier, four mobile homes on this property have since been removed. Parcel is about 11 acres, a little more than 11 acres, and it would be visible to approximately three or four residential neighbors. It's not in the designated growth area. Therefore, it may appear the landscaping business has proposed it could alter the character of the community if not properly screened. Second part of the analysis is that it should be compatible with uses permitted by right in that zoning district and shall not adversely affect the use or value of neighboring property. This storage building and office space would be approximately 50 by 70. Comparatively, it would be along the lines of an equestrian facility in terms of scale and mass, or a non-commercial greenhouse, or possibly an accessory dwelling unit. The difference would be is Mr. Reese would have, I believe, two or three employees that would report there and then go off-site to their clients to perform their services. In conclusion, again, this is a request for a landscaping material supply business, office and sales rooms before the Planning Commission tonight, because it is special use permit is required in this zoning district. It's not by right use. Hours of operation proposed to be Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., and will be closed on Sunday. Potential adverse impacts would be traffic entering and exiting the property, dust, increase in traffic, and visibility of outdoor storage areas. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the commission may have, and Mr. Reese is here tonight also.
In looking at the plan, from when I looked at it at the TRC meeting, it looks like there's an additional screening added coming in the entrance, and then across, looks like there's seems to be some additional screening on the front.
Correct. Mr. Reese has added on his revised sketch plan, he's added additional screening. There may be more additional screening if the SUP is approved, then he will have to submit a site plan. And at that point, we'll review it against the requirements of the zoning ordinance.
Thank you. Anyone?
Just a quick one. Is this,
yes, sir.
Does this, the special use permit, would this allow for on-site retail sales, or would that take a different?
It is part of the interpretation of landscaping materials supply business. There is a separate SUP. You can apply for a second use on the same application, and that would be a small retail sales or specialty retail sales, and I don't believe he did that with this application.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Just other than to introduce myself, my name's Tim Reese, own Belterra Landscapes. Filing for this SUP, landscape materials and supply was basically the closest thing for me to define what I was actually wanting to do with the property. I'm a landscape contractor by trade, and I really don't have any interest in selling any retail. This would be a place for my employees to meet in the morning. We would get our materials together and then travel off-site to people's residences to perform our service. So this was the best description or a file that I could come up with as far as applying for the SUP.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions, Mr. Reese? At this time, we're opening the public hearing, and anyone wishing to speak to this matter, please come forward to the microphone and state your name and your address.
I'm Pam Gregory, 2171 Paynes Mill Road, directly across from the proposed landscape business. This business does not belong in a quiet residential neighborhood. You're talking about your comprehensive plan and about growth. Putting a landscape business in the middle of a quiet area is not a good idea. Right now, we're not talking about a pickup truck and a lawnmower. We're talking about trucks bringing in mulch, piles of landscaping material right across from our driveway. People coming in the morning, 7 o'clock to 6 o'clock, Monday through Saturday. I don't know about you folks, but Saturday morning, I kind of like to sleep in a little, and I don't want to hear radios, doors slamming, people getting ready, loading up equipment, and hauling landscape materials out of the driveway. Granting him a special use permit is really an irresponsible action. It's not beneficial to the residents of the area, and it's not beneficial to the county. He's a business. You have areas in this county designated for businesses, and if you're truly interested in the economic growth and encouraging businesses, I think you need to put Mr. Reese's landscape building in one of those areas. There are plenty of other options, and I don't think right across in a neighborhood that's quiet, already has enough traffic on Paynes Mill, we don't need any more, and thank you.
Thank you.
My name's David Gregory, and I live at 2171 Paynes Mill Road, which is directly across from the proposed business. And when we discussed it the first time, we talked about water usage, pesticides. None of that did I see in the comments or today. But we've already had to drill another well. The person next door to me's well is pretty shallow. He didn't come tonight, unfortunately. But and we talked about noise. And the first thing I look at the new site plan is that he's going to have his employees parking right up against the road, directly across from my house, playing music and slamming car doors and such as that. And we had talked about maybe possibly moving the business down the hill a little bit, and that doesn't seem to be agreeable. And we've already got enough traffic on the road. I was mowing the grass the other day, and a car went by me doing 80 miles an hour if he was doing a mile. And we moved to Fluvanna County to be in a quiet residential neighborhood, and I'm sure there's several things that could be worse than the trailers were worse. But I just think we could need to think about what we're doing here.
Anyone else? It would end the public hearing now. Time for discussion of the Planning Department, Planning Commission.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
The type of screening would that you're proposing, would that screen your business from the neighbors completely?
On the current plan, the only plants that I have labeled are on the north side of the property line, and I can't remember if I have, are they Leland Cypress or Arborvitae, Green Giant Arborvitae. I think maybe that would, okay, it was Green Giant Arborvitae on the north side. I didn't label any species of plants on the west or the west side of the property line, or even on the south side of that basic perimeter where I have the bulk materials. But what I'm thinking is it's going to be large pyramidal evergreens on that west side where we're talking about having proposed employee parking. There's currently a very long line of white pines, which doesn't really effectively screen anything. When it was first installed, it probably did a decent job at doing some screening, but they're extremely leggy at the bottom, especially the first, 10 feet or so. So what my plan was there was going to be a dense evergreen hedge like Eleagnus, which grows to be about 10 to 12 feet by 10 to 12 feet high and wide. Of course, they wouldn't be that size when initially installed, but that's the size they would be, at full maturity. And they're fast growers. I plan on living on this property, and no screening requirements could not be any more than my wife's requirements for this property and not seeing the business. So I'm extremely sensitive to any neighbor's issues as far as, screening, and also my wife's. So,
Can you address the water concerns of the neighbors?
Other than having a bathroom and water to use, I'm not proposing or planning to have any greenhouse. In the future, if I ever had any field-grown plant material, they wouldn't be irrigated. There is a well on site, which is somewhat inadequate. I would have to drill another well in order to have what I'm planning. As far as the plant material, that we only order plant material for when jobs are sold, and I don't want to have to care for those plants any more than I have to. So the only stress on water would just be use of a bathroom and water to wash a truck now and again, and water current plant material that's waiting to get put in the ground.
Would there be any pesticides or things of that nature stored on the site?
The only pesticides, no. And it's not even herbicides. The only materials that we're storing on site would be like a fertilizer for new lawns. There'd be no pesticides. I wouldn't be using any pesticides or herbicides on site other than, for own personal use if I had a house and to maintain the property.
Are you using any pesticides in your business now? And the reason for that question is your business big enough with enough employees that you're subject to all the VDACs, pesticide regulations and everything?
No matter what the size business, you have to be licensed.
Right, so that's fairly heavily regulated.
Absolutely.
I know that. Okay.
Yep.
How much traffic do you expect?
Personal, and again, it's not going to be a retail location. So other than, I think last year I received 12 tractor trailer loads of mulch. So that's basically once a month. And as far as the planting, I do receive plant material. It's typically never on a not going to promise, but it's typically never on a tractor trailer. It's usually on a stake body truck. And it's seasonal. Spring and fall is typically when we do a lot of planting. So we could maybe get a truck in once every 2 weeks for a month or two.
How many employees do you have?
I currently have 4. 5 if you include my bookkeeper who comes in once a week.
Address the noise issue?
Noise, other than we have, mowers that get worked on. We have, skid loader and some other equipment that we use to load our trucks. Currently, I haven't had any issues with employees, blaring music. The current location, which I rent in Albemarle County, there's a house 30 yards, 40 yards from where our location is, and we've never had one complaint. We don't blast music. There wouldn't be a noise issue, I don't believe.
Where would you be loading the materials? Is it going to be close to the where the your employees will be parking? How close to the property line, basically, are you going to be doing the loading?
Well, the bulk material storage area, and again, this is just nothing really set in stone, but that distance, this piece of paper is out of scale, but if you took a look at the storage building, that north side of that building to the property line, to the north property line, is 40 feet. So I'd have to have a scale on me, but you're looking at well over 100 feet, probably 150 feet somewhere to its closest point. It's probably more like 200 and some.
I think 254 feet from the driveway to the property line.
Okay.
And your closest neighbor is how far away?
The closest neighbor is on that north side, which Mr. Tugwell showed, I believe it was in that first picture. And initially, my initial drawing, that was the screen that I installed at the very beginning because I was sensitive to the neighbors. I believe that house is a rental. That's neither here nor there, but
300 feet away, is that what we're looking at?
Any other questions? Any discussion?
Question for Mr. Tugwell, maybe?
Sir,
just hearing what he plans, and I guess I would ask the question. It doesn't seem all that different from maybe an agricultural operation, building a barn, storage building, and moving different equipment, different things. Would that, in fact, be a by right use of this property if this were an agricultural operation?
Agricultural uses are by right in the A1 district. So, yes, sir.
Building a building of this size and having some amount of activity similar maybe to this might be by right.
Yes, associated farm use with right. Peripheral, the noise that it would generate is a by right use. That is correct.
I also live on a farm. I have a big barn. And I consider this type of business no different than farming. There have been often times when I've stored hay, and it looks like a big mound, and once you stack it all up there. So I don't see that this is inappropriate in agriculture. And I think it's comparable to a barn, my tractors. And so I would think that it would be appropriate to do something like this. And I have neighbors, and they've never complained to me about my barn and my animals and noise. So that's just how I see it.
Mr. Chairman, I have kind of a couple of comments. First of all, if you're disposed to approve this and you want to regulate some of the things that have been questioned, like I wrote down three statements that came up. One was having to do with irrigation plant material. You can certainly impose a condition restricting irrigated plant material storage. Second, you can impose a condition restricting on-site retail sales, which would be directly related to traffic, of course. And third is that you could regulate on-site storage of pesticides and herbicides. And if you do not include those conditions, I think you're leaving open the possibility that the applicant's plans could change. So I just want to point that out to you. The other thing is that we're all looking at this sketch plan. The sketch plan has it's of some significance in that it tells you what the applicant's plan is, but he's not through with the location of these these various aspects of this use, including where the building is, what the setback would have to be, the setback of the parking, the number of parking spaces, the type and density of screening, that kind of thing. That will all be subject to a site plan approval. So please don't get the idea that this sketch plan, if you approve this special permit, this is the plan. It isn't. It gives an idea of what the applicant intends at the moment. One phrase that he used is one that I noted, and that is, nothing is cast in stone. And once you get, if the plan's approved and there are conditions attached to it, and the site plan is approved, it may not be stone, but it's at least reasonably dense concrete that it's going to be set in. So just bear that in mind. I can give you, if you want language for those conditions, I'll try to help you with those conditions, if you're disposed to approve the plan, the project.
I somewhat agree that if we do this, it would be a probably good idea to add these conditions. If somebody makes a motion to approve it, I think that would be a good idea. I think that the applicant may want to make some type of statement. If it's okay with y'all, I don't think we can let him do that.
Yeah, just one thing about the herbicides and pesticides. If that restriction is placed on this, I think that does greatly inhibit what I provide as a service. Those pesticides and herbicides could be stored on the property and in the building. There's no plan other than for recommended use and rates on the property, but that would greatly inhibit what I try to do. If I couldn't store them on my property, that would hurt me as far as trying to do what I'm trying to do. And as far as irrigation, I don't know how, as far as regulating how much water I would consume. I would have trouble understanding how that would be worded.
Well, if you look at if you look at the three biggest issues, I think, that have come up, noise, water, and pesticides, would that be a fair statement? And I guess I'd go back to Mr. Tugwell. This certainly would be... This wouldn't have an agricultural exemption to the noise ordinance. It wouldn't meet that, would it? So this would be subject to the noise ordinance.
Yes, sir.
So it would be actually better than an agricultural operation on the property, because agricultural has significant exemption to the noise ordinance. Or am I wrong? I guess I'm stating that, but I'm really asking that.
Whether it's exempt from the noise ordinance is irrelevant, really, if you adopt the staff's recommended conditions, because the staff has imposed a condition, recommended imposing a condition that it comply with the standards in the noise ordinance, whether
okay.
it's subject to it.
Okay, so that is in there. So it has to comply with the noise ordinance.
Mm-hmm. One question, Mr. Payne, on the pesticide issue, were you talking about the use of pesticides on the property or the storage of pesticides on the property?
Well, I was writing down what the applicant said, and the applicant said there wasn't going to be any storage of pesticides. Now, maybe I misunderstood him, or his statement wasn't intended to be that absolute or whatever. I was intended to talk about storage of pesticides. And I'm not talking about, clearly this doesn't have anything to do with, you know, rose dust on his personal landscaping in his house if he lives there. This is for the business.
Right, and if you look at...
I don't think this is a matter of going out and spraying down the grass to keep the aphids down. It's a matter of having storage there to make sure that you don't have a large concentration that might get away, like a spill or an accident or something like that.
Right, and I would suggest that the state heavily regulates that process as it is. It's a little bit familiar with that, so I'm not sure. Well, I understand the concern. I'm not sure the true hazard is maybe as great as some might think, because the state does heavily regulate that. So I guess the third one was the water issue. And I certainly appreciate that if he has plants there, you know, potted plants or things that he's going to transplant, there may be a need to water them. But I think a restriction of irrigating plants that are growing on the property, I think that would be a high water usage. You know, growing plants on the property would be a high water usage that maybe would have an impact, and maybe
if you had a greenhouse and you had potted plants that you had to water,
or if you were growing them in the dirt, if you basically had a nursery operation, that would be a high concentration of use.
What he did talk about was possibly putting some basically full grown plants that could be used later that would not require irrigation. But we need to have some clarification there.
Mr. Zimmer, the other issue that was raised was traffic. And that's that I noted that issue with respect to the comment about no retail sales on site. And that's one of the things that is significant. That kind of thing can be significant because you do have relatively heavy vehicles coming in and out, state bed trucks or whatever.
Right.
And you have a different kind of traffic if you have customers coming in, because they're probably coming in passenger cars. And when the applicant said he didn't intend to have any on-site retail, that impressed me as being, that significantly addresses the traffic issue.
Yes.
But if you don't condition it,
right,
it's just a matter of his intent at the time, which could change.
So I guess I would suggest maybe we have a condition of no retail sales. No nursery operation, you know, plants in the dirt that were growing.
Could I suggest no greenhouse or cultivation, irrigation of cultivated plants?
Sounds good to me. And trying to think of my final condition. Pesticides and the noise. Well, I think that would be it, because I think the noise ordinance and being subject to that is already in the staff condition. So I think that should address that. And if it doesn't, then he's obviously subject to whatever process, you know, fine or whatever, for not addressing that. So that would be my two additional condition would be my suggestion for us.
Okay. If somebody makes a motion, we'll need to consult with Mr. Payne for some language for those conditions. Do we have anybody want to make a motion at this time?
What page is it on? I can't find it here.
Supplement.
I make a motion that it be approved subject to the conditions as outlined by Mr. Payne and the three conditions we talked about.
And the conditions in the staff report as well?
Yes.
For the record,
does that need to be read?
Go over those.
The two conditions, the two additional conditions that I have based on Mr. Zimmer's comments, if that's what you're talking about, were there should be no greenhouse or cultivation of irrigated plants on site and no retail sales on site.
Sir, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Your next item is a site development plan for Campbell Equipment Company. It's STP 1402. They are requesting sketch plan approval to construct two building additions on their property. One is a 3,240 square foot building addition, and another is a 1,280 square foot building addition. Section 2223.8c of the zoning ordinance, any building expansion of 2,500 square feet or greater requires major site plan approval, and that's why it's before the commission tonight. The site's located in the rural preservation planning area. It's 1.849 acres, tax map 1911-1. It is zoned B1. All adjacent properties are zoned A1, agricultural. It was rezoned to B1 back in 1977. There has been a few subsequent site plans. Most recent one was back in 2012. You may have noticed the automobile sales on the northern fringe of the property. That was approved back in April of 2012. Site overview, of course, the pink area here is the sites at the corner of James Madison Highway and Bybee's Church Road. Several buildings on this property. Aerial photograph. When this was flown, doesn't show the current automobile sales, but again, it is on the northern end of the property in this area here. This is the applicant's site sketch plan. I believe current conditions are such that there's a necessity for these storage buildings, and so I believe that was the impetus for the major site plan, but there are storage issues, so that's the main reason why they're coming forward tonight with this plan. Took a few photographs for the commission. You can see the lack of storage, and I believe they're currently using these trailers, if you will, for their storage. And you can see the various and sundry containers there and automobile tires and truck tires placed on the ground there. Of course, this is the main building there on the corner. And this is looking north towards the auto sales. So with this plan, this would eliminate the trailers and the exterior visibility of the tires that you see, and they would go away. So site is accessed via an existing entrance off of Route 15. VDOT commented there's a need to consolidate the three entrances, actually, into one entrance. There's also access from Bybee's Church Road, so that's something that I have notified the applicants of, and they would have to redesign the final site plan to reflect the comments of VDOT. We'll go back to VDOT for VDOT's review and approval. Also, any new parking areas require to be at least 25 feet from any public right-of-way. That site is a little tight there, so they're going to have to go back to the drawing board, perhaps, and to meet that requirement. In conclusion, sketch plan appears to meet requirements of the zoning ordinance, and final site plan must be submitted and reviewed prior to approval. And staff recommends approval of this site plan subject to the conditions in your staff report. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have one. You said that the three entrances on Route 15 be consolidated in one, but in our technical review notes, it says the three entrances on 613 to be consolidated in one.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to cooperate that with Mr. Wood at VDOT, but There are several entrances to that property, and I believe there's a conflict with the proposed parking, new parking, because it encroaches into the required building setback or the parking setback of 25 feet. So when that's revisited and the plan is submitted to back to VDOT, those comments are subject to change. Mr. Wood's comments are subject to change.
My name is Robert Boucheron. I'm an architect who was hired by Mr. Campbell, who is not here. Just wanted to introduce myself. After I looked at Mr. Tugwell's comments, I looked again at the sketch site plan. I believe I can rearrange the parking to satisfy what he said. And I also believe I can eliminate the extra entrances on Route 613. So I think I can redraw it. And I'm here to answer any questions that you would have.
I'm a little confused about the entrances on 15. It seems like there's just one big long entrance.
That's correct. There is one entrance on 15.
All right. And that's okay with VDOT? Or do they want that changed?
No, I don't think so. I would call that an uncontrolled access.
Uncontrolled?
Now I would call it an uncontrolled access.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're talking about putting in controlled access.
Okay, with curbs, is that what you mean? Or
something like that, right?
I believe VDOT would consider this an expansion of the current use by the addition of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And that would kick in their requirements to close the entrance as much as possible.
Okay, so it sort of look more like a normal entrance into a business rather than opened.
Correct, and that's the trend that VDOT's been going to.
Right.
And I think if I'm looking at this diagram right, there is presently like three entrances on 613. It showed edge of pavement, and then it shows the entrance coming in there, and then between two other places, and then another one further back.
Mm-hmm.
So in his comments in the technical review committee, it does say 613, so on the diagram it shows a commercial vehicular traffic flow to Route 15 commercial entrance. And then it shows the entrance on that corner where the two roads come together being shut off. Am I right?
But that was eliminated in 2012.
So that corner is already not controlled. Okay, I see that on there.
Yeah, this time we'll open up the public hearing. Is there any comments from the public? Seeing no one wishing to come forward, open up the discussion of the Planning Commission. If there's no discussion, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion. I move to approve site development plan 1402, a sketch site plan to construct a 3,240 square foot building addition and a 1,280 square foot building addition with respect to 1.849 acres of tax map 19, section 11, parcel 1, subject to the conditions listed in the staff report.
Do I have a second?
Yes, you do.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmerman, a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. We have no subdivision tonight, and our next is unfinished business. We will be discussing part of the comprehensive plan review discussion. What we're going to be talking about tonight is
Mr. Chairman, this was intended to keep the same informal conversational nature as the Planning Commission work sessions, which is what this is basically an extension of. So I've provided you all with my progress thus far on this chapter. But I'm happy to take comments and questions. I've gone through. I think I've updated all of the relevant statistics. I'd like to point out, as you likely know, that thus far in the process, it's been mostly information gathering and identifying parts that need updating, as opposed to writing any sort of new policy.
Mentioned in the land use chapter, but it's nowhere in the community planning area, and there's a small CPA in the Scottsville area. I do know it talks about the different community plans that were done back in, I think, 2004, 2005. They're 9 to 10 years old now, and we probably, if we're going to reference those, that we need to look at those and see what, how they comply with what we're saying in the comprehensive plan, since we're referencing those documents. And a lot of the facts and figures that Weldon Cooper said about how many we were going to have by 2050, I forgot the 28,000 more residents by 2050, which meant that would be between now and then, that would take 777 new residents each year between now and then. So I had some problems with some of the figures that we were using in the comprehensive plan.
Yeah, that trend line probably made sense based on current data 5 years ago.
Well,
clearly it is grossly outdated now.
At one time, we were the second lowest county in the state.
And they just made the assumption that that trend was going to continue indefinitely, right. Which is...
And we got up to like 67 at one time, too. So, yeah, so it's got what you said, we increased by very...
It was less than that.
Less than 0.5% last year.
I think we should have a discussion about the Palmyra Community Plan, since we've had people this evening come forward and ask us to change the comprehensive plan to reflect the rural character of Palmyra, to protect it. And I'd like to know what the other committee members think about that.
I think we certainly need to have a discussion. And I actually have a question for the planning professionals and maybe Mr. Payne. And my question is, you know, we heard a very impassioned plea about from multiple people to get rid of the planning area with the idea that that is the method to protect, preserve what is there now and, you know, to maintain that character. So my question is, does removing the planning area achieve that? Because I'm not sure that it does. Yeah. Because I think it leaves it open to a more free-for-all.
I would point out that it's been on the books for 5 years without what was suggested happening.
So I wonder if the way to get to where these folks want to be is to have more input, different things in the plan, maybe.
Sure.
And that's what I'm asking, because... I look to you guys as professionals. I don't dispute that your goals are admirable. But I'm just not sure getting rid of the planning area is actually going to achieve that goal. I'm worried that it's not.
If all it took to preserve Fluvanna's rural character was to remove that CPA, I think it would have happened before now. I think there's more to it than simply removing it. It could happen and result in excellent development. It could happen and it could result in rural clusters throughout, and I'm not sure that would be what would be desirable either.
Right.
I will say that I consider it mutually exclusive to have no growth, a permanently rural area, and low taxes. I don't see those three things complementing each other. That's sort of a tall order to keep taxes low, keep everything rural, and have no growth. I would also wonder what the effect would be on getting rid of the CPA on any future business growth. It could well have the effect that we would end up with nothing but rural clusters and nary a business ever again in Palmyra, and that would take the 88 cents up even higher than it currently is.
What about shrinking it?
That was actually already in, that's one of the additions from what we discussed last time. The recommendations for enhancing village character, number one, is consider removing some of the rural edges of the Palmyra CPA. That's already in this updated one. We could update, we could remove quite a bit of it. We could remove it completely at your pleasure and at the pleasure of the citizens. I guess what I'm trying to get at is that I would be really cautious about considering some sort of panacea for what the concerns are.
It seemed to me in reading it that one of the big things is related to the density requirements. It's not so much the CPA zone, but the density is allowed in the CPA zone. So I think it would be smart for the Planning Commission to look at the density levels. I think smart growth is something that we want to encourage for sure.
Well, I think, as I mentioned at our last work session, what happened with that density thing, we had a consultant come in to do a consulting thing about the UDA at Dyson's Crossroads. And as a result of that, he put the same density in the CPAs as the UDA at Dyson's Crossroads, and that's what happened. So we need to take a look at that. Another thing that we discussed that in conjunction with this, if we reduce the size of the CPA, I would like to make sure that individual properties don't have a partial this and a partial that. We've seen properties that have 99% of one thing and 1% of another thing. And it would be so easy to take and run that along the road or something like that to get it doesn't make sense to me to have a piece of property that is set up maybe neighborhood residential and 1% of it is something else or something of that nature. So I think that Mr. O'Brien at our joint meeting actually mentioned the fact of possibility of reducing some of the size of some of the CPAs. And I think maybe that some of the density things is a real thing that we really need to look at and something like that. We try to do, we mentioned in some of the chapters about, especially like say for instance, neighborhood residential, it says, in parts of this, it says mostly single family homes. But when you look at the chart, it actually gives it more weighted to multi-family homes, the way that the thing is set up. So I think you can do up to 50% of multi-family, and also the single family was 25 to 50%, but you've also got to remember it was a 10 to 25% for business. So you could do 50%, you could do 25% business and only have 25% single family. So those are the things to think about in that. And in one part of the community design it talks about 4 units per acre in Palmyra, the community planning area. But then you get back into the weeds of it, you can do a whole lot more. So we need to solve those problems and make sure that the sections say the same thing.
Mr. Chairman, since Mr. Zimmer invoked my name, kind of like talking about the devil.
It sounds ominous. It sounds ominous. I didn't mean it that way.
Let me make a couple of comments in this regard. I think you're crystallizing the concerns about this particularly the Palmyra area. And let me see if I can just make a couple of comments that might help you. First of all, as to the area, I think some of your experience recently, and this is consistent with a comment that one of the ladies made, excuse me, in your public comment period, that's a very big area. The Palmyra community planning area is a big area. It goes all the way from the high school, really all the way to above Courthouse Road, almost to the old Palmyra School, above the Palmyra School. That's a big area. I don't see any problem if you were to draw that back to be a smaller area. The one comment that was made that did concern me was the comment, we want to keep it the way it is, we don't want any changes in it. That's not an appropriate objective of planning, and that would be very difficult to defend that. So I wouldn't support your saying something like that. The comment about density is a good one, and one of the things that the density that you have in the plan now is, I think it's almost certainly unrealistic, among other things. And one of the reasons for that is, as people have said, the change in the prospect for utilities. Now, it's certainly not the case that you could never have utilities, water and sewer, and I'm talking about water and sewer, to serve these things, but we've been dramatically set back on that. And if you recall, one of the major setbacks in that was what DEQ has done to the expansion of the Palmyra wastewater plant, because that was going to be used to serve growth in the Palmyra area. And it can't be, not because of anything the county's done, but because of DEQ's restriction on the expansion of it. So as a practical matter, you can serve Palmyra for sewer with that plant for what's here. But as a matter of expansion for substantial growth to be served by that plant, it's not going to happen, at least not unless DEQ changes its position substantially, which I very much doubt under these political circumstances. So restricting the density, I think, is something that would be appropriate for you to consider, as well as the overall area. As far as abolishing the CPA, I think that would be a mistake. And Mr. Zimmer, I think, is right that it really wouldn't reflect what you have now, and it really wouldn't reflect what you're likely to have in the future. I mean, Palmyra is an old, I'm going to use the term, don't anybody giggle at me, urban area of the county. It's been here a long time. I think it was 1915 was the big fire. You know, Palmyra was actually a sort of a going concern until the fire came and burned it all down. It's never really recovered from that. But if you go out, just walk out walk out the courthouse door, this is not a rural area. It's what I would more likely call a rural village. But there are decidedly non-rural uses here, one of which you're sitting in. And the fact that it's a government use doesn't change the fact that it's a non-rural type use. Courthouse, county office building, the county office building's up further up on the old Court Green. There's still a number of offices, private offices in Palmyra. There's a church. You can see this is a village. And one of the things that always concerns me is taking something that is a village. It may not be explosive growth or anything. And of course, I didn't mean to leave out the properties on Route 15, but you got the post office, the bank, gas station, several other uses, number of private offices. Those are quote-unquote urban village-type uses. And it always concerns me to have village-type uses that you know are here and are likely to at least continue, if not expand, and not plan for them. That's one of the problems we had historically with you know, we only had R1 and R2 residential districts, and it really didn't make any sense when you started talking about having more concentrated areas. So I think you have to recognize this is a growth center, if for nothing else then it's a center of government again, and related uses to that. Finally, let me make one observation, and this is specifically with respect to Mr. Bibb's comment. You need to be very careful about looking at the lines on these maps. I don't mean to be gesturing to that, because the lines on that map do mean something. But you need to be careful about looking at the the lines on a comprehensive plan growth area map and saying, oh, that runs along my property line, or it cuts through my field, or whatever. It might or it might not. This is not like a zoning map. Albemarle County has become absolutely fixated on this. If you look on the map and your property isn't colored the right color, they make you amend the comprehensive plan. I don't think that's an appropriate way to look at it at all. It's a general guide. And just because your property is this side or that side of what appears to be the line on the map, that line is not that precise, and it's not intended to be that precise. So unless you have some major feature that you're concerned about, like, you know, an obvious major feature would be arriving at a river. I mean, that's an obvious major feature. But the line between my backyard and Mrs. Eager's backyard, other than Mrs. Eager might shoot me if I go in her backyard, really is not something that's particularly important for the comprehensive plan, except in special cases. So I just suggest to you that if you want to change this area, think of it as a bubble rather than a map or plat. So those are my comments. I think your discussion is trending the right way. I just suggest some things that might help you guide it.
Mr. Chairman, what Mr. Payne was saying reminded me of something that I thought I should share. Recently, Mr. Nichols asked me to write for him a brief summary of why the CPAs that were selected were selected. And I'm able to recall some of the criteria, and they are presence of amenities, presence of important transportation infrastructure, a population base, and a unique history. Palmyra has all of those, and that's why it was selected. 15 and 53 meet right there. There's a unique history. There's a population base. None of that's to say one way or another what should happen in the future, but that it does show that it was well thought out and reasoned for it to be selected in the first place.
I think we have to recognize that you know, as the community grows, the natural extension is going to be, if we're trying to attract people into Fluvanna for agritourism, for industrial growth, commercial growth, et cetera, that's going to push down 15 to some degree, not entirely, and it's going to push up 250. But certainly if we want to develop agribusiness and tourism, agritourism in this area, getting people to spend some time and energy in the village of Palmyra, I think strengthens the reputation of the county, also strengthens the village itself, because it allows certain businesses to thrive and grow. And you don't have to have extreme residential growth around that to still enjoy what is sort of the rural nature of the county and a density that is more appropriate to sustain a village for agritourism. I suspect that, as you were pointing out, Mr. Payne, Palmyra in 1904 was maybe 10 times the size of it is now. I was trying to look it up. I can't find the numbers. But I think the current number for the village of Palmyra is 104 people, in 2010 census. So we're talking about a very small area, but yet it's an integral part to perhaps a larger plan of the county to attract people into Palmyra. I view an opportunity for the county to make the Zion's Crossroads entrance into Fluvanna and into central Virginia as part of a pathway that people would take, as opposed to maybe driving up to the next exit and going on to Monticello from exit 120 there. I think you can bring people into this area. I think that as we continue to see breweries and wineries grow in this area, it would be great to have folks stop on our exit and come into our county and visit our wineries on the way to visit other wineries in Afton and Nelson and so on. So in looking at the comprehensive plan, I think it's important that we look to the fact that this is a natural pathway, a natural gateway to bring people into Fluvanna and into the history of Fluvanna. to me that's important. I mean, I think we would limit ourselves if we don't consider that.
I think what we basically, a lot of us have said that we probably need to reduce the size of the CPA. We need to reduce the density that is in this area with the transect concept that we have running through this area. What I would like to see, like I said, I did some research and found out what they did when they did that. They used the exact same density for Lions Crossroads, Paramar, 14, and everything. And maybe it was an easy way to for them to have done it, but anyway, they got $50,000 to do it. So.
One thing about that that was the case when it was done before, but it's not the case now, is Zion Crossroads had a specific figure that you had to meet.
The UDA mandate.
The UDA mandate had a specific figure, and you don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Well, even a density of 4 per acre, if you have 100 acres of land, that's 400 people that you can put on there.
It's 400 units. It's not 400 people.
400 units, yes, sir. 400
units. Yeah, actually, 100 acres. You really can't get 400 because you have to take out the roads.
Sure, no. But still, it can be a substantial density.
What I'd like to do is ask the planning department, and this is my thinking, and chime in, to look at the density thing and try to figure out a way that we can make it so that it, it does specifically say in this part 4 units per acre, but yet when you get into the weeds of it, it can be as much as. Some of the stuff shows as much as 12 units per acre, and so forth like that. So.
Well, one thing you might bear in mind is if you look at existing reality, with the exception of the PUD district, the maximum density, residential density in the county is 2.9 units an acre. So 4 units an acre, if somebody were to come in and say, I'm buying up all the vacant land in Palmyra and I'm going to develop it in residential uses at the maximum density permitted by the comprehensive plan, it would be denser than Lake Monticello. So that gives you some perspective on what that means.
But you have to allow for a kind of density that isn't necessarily your traditional detached housing, right? I think that having some sort of ability to put people into, whether it's a condominium or something along those lines, would be...
You might very well. And one way you can accommodate that is you concentrate, you have a really active cluster. Mm-hmm. And, that wouldn't be inconsistent with Palmyra, because that's kind of the way Palmyra... if you go out and look at the properties in Palmyra, they're close to Main Street, they have narrow frontages, but they got big backyards. So in some sense, that wouldn't be inconsistent with that anyway.
Yeah.
Any more comments?
Mr. Bibb, I just wanted to add that we discussed earlier today between you and I the possibility of getting Mr. Stevens here from Public Works to discuss the water situation in the county, and Palmyra, of course, will be one of the topics of discussion.
Yeah, we talked about having possibly Mr. Stevens to talk to us about the war and the infrastructure, because the next chapter that we're going into is going to be in infrastructure. And we also talked about maybe talking to Mr. Popovich about the economic development piece and, what type of things that are, possible to do, something like that. So as we went forward, we need to use these experts that we have to help us.
And just for your information, we have met once with Mr. Stevens, and we intend to meet with him more. We kind of just went through line by line of some parts of the comprehensive plan and then requested that he look over the entire infrastructure chapter and submit comments. And we intend to do a similar thing with Mr. Popovich with the economic development, and have already met with him once.
So we were talking about maybe the school people about the education section and so forth.
And they caught wind of the project, and they already called me to see when they can come and talk about it. So,
so we want to use these people to help us a little bit, because going through this and seeing some of the things that have happened over a period of time, we see where mistakes were made, see where we didn't notice things when they came before us, something like that. So. I went back and I looked at this thing about the density was approved. There were two members of the Board of Supervisors had some problems with the density that was showing up on this and had a problem with some of the heights of the buildings.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the other side of the table, I can just say that a comprehensive plan like this for somebody coming in is a guidebook. And you know, if they don't have the experience, if they don't know the history, you know, that's something they're going to put a lot of weight on. So certainly, you know, the more defined it is to some degree, the easier it is for them to make decisions from that end. So.
And that's the one reason we have this review every 5 years, to see what mistakes we may have made, see what changes. I mean, some of the figures that, and we had supposedly had to use the Walter Cooper figures for some things and the census figures for other things, and some of those things, even when I came on the planning commission, I said, they just don't look right. I mean, they were using the back of the roads at Lake Monticello. Well, I could see that that was going to run out pretty soon, but they were using that as a multiplier. Like that, so.
Well, you still, I mean, even if you just take simple extrapolation of the growth of Virginia at 3% and apply it to a county of 30,000, we're almost at 30,000 just to make the math easy, that still can put you at close to about 1,000 people per year, and it grows exponentially. I mean, we've had a slowdown, and if you talk to some of the realtors locally, what they'll tell you is that, you know, the slowdown wasn't just in Virginia. Of course, it happened all across the country, but a lot of the migration into Virginia is coming from the north. Well, when you can't sell your house in the north, you don't move down here. So as the real estate market picks up throughout the rest of the country and up north, we'll see that trend line, you know, increase. Whether it's the same growth that we had before or not, I don't know, but I think that even very conservative numbers of 2% growth, which is below the state average, would still put us at, you know, 40,000.
What we're finding now, if you'll look at all the figures, more people are moving toward the cities.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, there may be changes as well, too.
And,
sure.
We see that. I don't think we'll ever be back to number two in the state. I also look at every day. That kind of concerns me, the fact of we want to have the best, but yet we've got a lot of people that are not able to pay for what they've got.
In the comp plan, we've talked about this before, it states that they want to direct the growth to the south and west of Palmyra.
South and southwest.
So maybe we should think about that. Is that still the preference?
Well, I think a lot of that was the fact that they, we thought that was going to be worth going up 53.
Right.
We probably also thought that it would be development across from Pleasant Grove.
Right.
We don't know what will happen there. Like Mr. Payne says, we were planning on another section of sewer, and the DEQ has put a halt to that. So that's not available unless they figure out a different way. The original pipeline for us when we were doing the comprehensive plan was coming up and going right up 600 and so forth like that. So. Everything has changed since we did the comprehensive plan.
And the development has changed. The ability for the developer to put in his own septic is something that they didn't have before.
I don't see a subdivision or development of any in the county of Fluvanna that has sold completely out. There is no build out that I see of any of the developments.
Any of the developments that are on the books are no longer there.
Yes. And see, it used to be after 5 years, if nobody had done anything, if even built a road or anything, we could mark them off. When we had the financial collapse, the Virginia government put a quash on that. And I don't know whether that's changed or not. Mr. Payne might know, but they stopped us from doing that.
That's still in effect. 17, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. 2017.
To 2017.
Now there are some limitations on that, but you can still vacate subdivisions for appropriate reasons, but you can't. They don't just expire.
Well, it seems to me one difference between, say, CPA type plan zones versus cluster zones is, you know, the density sort of attracts density on its own, and so comparing the fact that we might have cluster zones spread out throughout the county and that they might not be populated doesn't necessarily equate with the fact that putting in a new community won't have, won't succeed. I suspect if you looked at Louisa, you might find that there's dozens of cluster zones that are undeveloped, but that isn't stopping Spring Creek from succeeding. So, I mean, I think it can be a false argument to consider that just because a cluster development is failing here, you would see a failed development here.
I'm talking about cluster developments. I'm talking about some of the smaller developments.
Which are mostly...
But the cluster developments, we were also required at that time to allow up to, if I'm correct on this, we had to allow up to 40% of the A1 to be allowed to be cluster subdivision.
But I would hesitate a little bit to draw much of a conclusion for us in Spring Creek. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, I may be wrong about this, but what I hear about Spring Creek is it's not all that happening in place. If you listen on the radio, there's lots of sort of hard sales going on. I may have a misconception about that, but that's what I hear. Second thing is Spring Creek has a major advantage over virtually anything in Fluvanna. And that is, it's right at Zion Crossroads with major traffic infrastructure. And, of course, the immediate major shopping. The third thing is that it got a head start relative to the bubble. So that if you were that same developer coming in today, you would have a very different perception of the market than that developer did in 2002 or whatever it was when that was being conceived. So I won't say just forget about it,
a lot of the larger point is, and I'm, you know, when I say Spring Creek, it's not that I'm saying, hey, we're putting a golf course here or whatever the case may be. I think the point of what might be considered this new urbanism model, where you have these planned villages, where you have a mix of growth, where you have walking communities, the things that they talk about in the planning book, and that those kinds of developments, if done properly and are attractive, compete in an entirely different way to a development that maybe is, you know, a Meadow Creek or something along those lines that we have throughout the area. The attractiveness of what is proposed helps to drive the sales is really the point that I was trying to make.
That's certainly true. One thing that was said, and Mrs. Eager will probably think I'm a broken record when I say this, but one of the things that a member of the public said tonight is I consider to be one of the central facts driving the real estate market in the future, and that is the price of gasoline. That when when you had a job in Charlottesville and gasoline was $1.20 a gallon, you could afford to drive 20 miles each way to go in. I'm seeing gasoline, it's almost $4 a gallon now. And I'm not talking about regular, I'm talking about regular. $3.50, $3.60 a gallon. Income hasn't gone up much. And what that's done, and I think you'll see is reflected in the Charlottesville, immediate Charlottesville area, there's lots of infill, and particularly in the city, where lots that, you know, I've lived in Charlottesville for 40 years, and you look up on the side of the hill, and it was just a green hill and some trees for 38 years, and then all of a sudden there's a townhouse development.
Like the City Walk thing that's being developed out off of Carlton Road.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's one.
The
two that I thought of, that I think of right offhand, if you all are familiar with it, are both on Fifth Street. One of them is right there at, I forget what you call it. My wife used to teach at Jackson Bias School back in there. There's a townhouse development there, and then there's another townhouse development on the other side of Fifth Street, you know, half a mile toward town. That's the kind of development I'm talking about, because those are relatively low-priced houses, but they have significant amenities, internal amenities, and they're
close to work.
They're very much clustered, and you can live there. You could probably live there without a car, because you're on a road that's on a street that's got bus service, you got bicycles, you got sidewalks, and you got shopping. That you go to the grocery store, you walk to the grocery store. And I think you're going to see that as a major issue for development for us.
And that's the trend with the millennials and the younger generation X, is they're choosing to live in these compact neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and in a lot of cases, not participating in car ownership. This is a complete.
Well, I don't know the role enough of planning as to where that fits. I mean, obviously, if you allow unregulated growth and you have developers coming in and putting up a bunch of properties, and then everybody decides to move out because gas is $10 a gallon, I get that. I mean, that's still going to have a negative effect on any rural community where you have commuters going into a city that, regardless of where we are right now. I just don't know that if the role of planners is to anticipate that, or if that is the risk of the developer, you know, or the person who's making the division or whatever the case may be. I don't have an answer to that.
It's a
good discussion, but I just don't know what the.
I think the partial answer to it is that you in developing plans for the county need to be realistic about trends and market pressures and things like that, because the worst thing you could possibly have happen would be to have a developer come in that hasn't studied those things, doesn't understand them, and gets his property zoned for some sort of unrealistic development. And of course, the worst thing is if he gets it partially built and can't sell it, because then you have a complete white elephant that's not good for anybody. It's certainly not good for him or for the neighbors or for the county or anybody else. So recognizing things like what Mr. Stewart just said about market pressures with you young whippersnappers is something I think you do need to take into account. Now, and that's one reason, of course, in 5 years ago in 2009 or 10 years ago in 2004, the market was dramatically different. And that's where you get these things like, we need 4 units an acre in the Palmyra, and we need 1,000 acres in Palmyra to be developed and things like that, because you had market pressures like that. Those market pressures, I think they're a thing of the past.
You're still seeing places like Old Trail, which is, you know, certainly pretty far out from Charlottesville. Sort of what I would define as newer. But
that started long before the bubble.
But it was very slow, and now it's picked back up.
That's one factor. The other factor is Old Trail doesn't exclusively appeal to Charlottesville. Old Trail, a lot of development in Old Trail appeals to Waynesboro.
And, I mean, to some degree, wouldn't we have Richmond? And
no, but Waynesboro is much closer. It's only, what, 8 or 10 miles from Old Trail, from Crozet.
No more than 15.
Crozet to Waynesboro. So you need to consider that that would be as if you were talking about, I wouldn't say Richmond to Ashland, but it's more like that than it is Charlottesville to Richmond, Palmyra to Richmond. 50 miles is a heck of a commute. Yeah. Well, can't be done. But.
And also we talked about the fact that possibly moving the CPA of Zion's Crossroads westward, and there was a lot of reasons for that, which would put it closer to the earliest possibility of water. So,
that's closer to Charlottesville.
Westward?
Close, the northwest part of the county is closer to Charlottesville than any other section of the county.
And eventually they're talking about putting another 64 interchange right maybe there at the end of that, huh?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Beaver Dam area, yeah.
I mean, I can look at our comprehensive plan. They show a roundabout at Zion's Crossroads, and they show these roadways with these divided things and so forth like that. So we got a lot of maybes. They're talking about in this comprehensive plan about this roundabout down here and so forth like that. So that's been a long time coming. So maybe the next time we should take a look at that. The plans that you brought to our joint meeting about moving, they had about 3 or 4 different plans about moving the CPA at Zion's Crossroads westward.
I brought those plans?
No. You were there.
I was there.
I think it was Mr. Nichols that mentioned the fact that he had some information that they had possibly talked about future interchange there.
Beaver Dam.
It's called Beaver Dam Road.
Yeah. Well, that area has always been called Beaver Dam all my life.
You're not that old, Mr. Bibb. It's been called Beaver Dam since a long time before that.
Sure.
This is true.
Beaver's still there.
There's an ammunition shortage.
I may have only been in Suvannah County 41 years myself, but my family's been here hundreds of years, so I know a little bit about it. My mother was born at the poorhouse in Suvannah County. Of course, my grandfather was a caretaker. That's a funny story. Any other discussion about this tonight, or do we want to take this stuff that he's given us and take a look at it, and maybe y'all can get back to us about some of these things that we discussed. Take a look at what we could do about reducing the size of the CPA of Power, look at the density things that we've got, look at what we've got in the comprehensive plan in the community design, as well as in the land use chapter. And if you'll go back, I could give you the actual, I've got it written down at home, the time that we actually voted on that density thing, but it's probably easy to find, and it was so forth like that.
If I can make a recommendation for next time along those lines, it would be to specifically have, all of us would have the land use chapter and the community design chapter in front of us so that we could look back and forth and weed out any of those inconsistencies or contradictions that are vexing both to the commission and the planning staff on a pretty regular basis.
Is there any, in that process, can you define what is a maximum amount within a given acreage? I mean, I know you have so much per acre, 4 units or 3.93 or 2.93, I think you said.
2.9.
But when you have somebody that maybe has 600-700 acres, can you limit the acreage in essence? Well, there's different ways, but rather than a per number density.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. That's convenient because you can translate that easily into a regulating the development itself. But I mean, one way to do it is simply plan for an aggregate population. Mm-hmm. You know, that'd be another way to do it. And that would be harder to translate into a direct correlation with the zoning or the subdivision. Mm-hmm. But it would also make it more flexible as to, as you say, 4 units an acre makes sense if you got 2 acres. But 4 units an acre doesn't make sense if you got 600 acres.
Right. Yeah.
Jay, would you say that again? You want us to be prepared with the...
It's just a recommendation, but because the inconsistencies between the community design chapter and the land use chapter, specifically like the densities and some other things in that matrix, have been problems, I thought a good place for us to concentrate for a while would be on making sure that those are reconciled with one another. So when somebody opens it up, they're not getting wrong information because they didn't think to look at both chapters.
Okay.
But what I also realized when looking at this, we sort of probably need to, in conjunction with this, maybe look at that infrastructure chapter to find out where we really going to have it.
No doubt about that. Because that's so...
Because that's already grossly outdated.
That, well, the infrastructure is so intimately related to the others, both cause and effect. For economic development and land use and everything else, they need to mesh.
I'll see if I can get Mr. Stevens for May meeting.
Okay.
Talk to us about that.
Well, and I think it'd be wise for the county overall, not just for Palmyra, but to have a general sense of what they consider the use of alternative sewer systems, and what they consider the use of acceptable draws from wells. Sort of as a general guideline, so that we understand that, because certainly you can have arguments about bringing in 900 people, say, but what if you brought in 50 or 25 people 50 times? I mean, what's the impact? How do you handle that, right? What's the change? You might not get the same outcry, but you still might have the same result. And so consistency in terms of what we think is the right policy for that, is helpful in terms of the planning process, looking at it from the other side.
Are you planning on bringing Mr. Stevens to our regular meeting in May? Because in our work session in May, we have work session with the people of Poplar Ridge, plus working on this. So where are we at?
I think we were only doing the one chapter.
What's that?
I think we were only doing the infrastructure chapter in anticipation of Poplar Ridge taking up the majority of the time.
Yeah, that's true. We were planning, just anticipating doing the infrastructure chapter at the work session.
Okay. What we do is work on the infrastructure chapter at that, and then come back and try to combine these three chapters before us.
Align them anyway. Align them so they all mesh.
You agree?
That makes sense. I think, and I'll get with Mr. Stevens tomorrow and see if he'd be available.
Any other discussion about this? If not, we're going to go ahead to our last public comment section for the night. Limited to 3 minutes each. Anyone wishing to come forward at this time, state your name and address.
Supposed to be a member of the commission. My name is Alan Halley, 14307 James Madison Highway. Just want to clear up a couple of things. I think maybe we took you by surprise a little bit tonight by coming in and giving you some citizen input. But the reason it happened was we were at one of those neighborhood meetings, and we were raising concerns very similar to what we raised tonight. And one of our county officials said, very rightfully, have you raised those concerns with the Planning Commission? And we had not. And we said we need to. And that's why we came to you tonight. And there are a lot of other citizens who feel the same way. There is a real, real strong feeling in this county. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I'd like to just respond to a couple of things. One is, fire was in 1930, Mr. Payne, just a historical note.
I'm number only off by 15 years.
Yeah, I was here, I remember. So number two is, when we talk about things about Palmyra and being a village, we're not planners. We're not framing it or phrasing it right. But you've got Jeff Suling, who lives up there on Main Street, and he's always parked on the road in front of his house. People did before he bought that house. They always. And you've got the court green over here with a concrete wall. And when his car is parked there, it's one-way traffic. Somebody has to stop and let the car go the other direction. And it's that way all over this place on court days. Now, when there are lots of people here and lots of cars parked there, we're just saying we can't stand with so many more vehicles in this village. That's just one example. When people say we want to keep it the same, they didn't frame it exactly right, maybe. What they're saying is we like our quality of life now, and we're counting on you to preserve it for us. That's what they're saying. We really appreciate what you're doing and all the effort that you're putting into this. And we wanted to get you at the outset, because when you do a plan, you get invested in that plan. It becomes your plan. We understand that. And then when you say, well, let's have public comment, and we come in, then it becomes sort of confrontational and adversarial. We don't want to do that. We want to have an input now. And when you go to Albemarle and get somebody to tell you what you should do, you're going to get Albemarle County. Go to Thomas Jefferson Planning District, you're going to get Route 29. We're hoping you're going to do something more innovative and more localized for us. When the gentleman says the CPAs are well thought out, I'm not a planner, but you look at them. Somebody took the places people live and they said, by golly, there are people living there, let's put some more people all around them. You tell me, why is there a Columbia CPA if it's well thought out? They're the basic necessities of life are miles away. Why would you have a Columbia CPA? We have one. I'm just saying, gentlemen, I'm hoping for some new and innovative thinking, and this is here, of course, some new and innovative thinking here. And if we didn't do it the right way, tell us how to do it. Tell us when you can take input, because there are people that do want to be heard. We have missed that opportunity for years, and we've seen what it does, and we're not happy. So our CPAs we view as being a target, because when a developer, and that's what we're upset about, because when a developer comes in and says, this is where you told us you wanted development, put it in the CPAs, here we are. And we're saying things have changed. We don't have the infrastructure. We can't handle it. Help us out. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing no one else coming forward, unless there is any other business we may take, we will adjourn at this time. 9:03.